Good afternoon. Today is Friday, December the 21st, 356th day of the new year. Happy winter. Today is winter solstice. It says so on the magic calendar behind you, Carol.
And it's also, what's it on the Mayan calendar? We're still here.
We still got a couple hours still to go. Don't get too lippy yet, girl. Joe, Carol Reish is with us, and she brought along a buddy.
John Winsler, a longtime district engineer, started with the district in 1960, and a very dear friend and colleague and advisor to the Water District.
And historian.
Yes.
Yeah. Of water and a little bit more.
A lot of water.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk a little bit about some of the history of what the dam was, where it came from, and also the Water District. One of us has been here and cognizant long enough to know these things, so we'll see what tidbits of information he may share when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reish and John Winsler. But before we do, let's see if we can find a fun quote here. Ah, here you go. Samuel Goldwyn, Metro Gold. Okay. Yep. Quote, "You've got to take the bitter along with the sour." Oh, boy. So, Carol, how do you want to define John? Somebody who's just worked with the district for a long time and knows a lot of stuff?
Oh, much more than that. That's a true statement. But first of all, a very brilliant and effective engineer, businessman, a very unique relationship where you have a district engineer who's been there from the beginning, very trusted advisor to me and the board. So it's more than just someone who's been here a long time and knows a lot of the history.
John, what do you think of the Water District as an entity, if you could describe it in a couple of sentences?
You know, I've said this before, and I really mean it. I think if all government worked like the Humboldt Bay Water District, we wouldn't be having any of the problems that we have in terms of deficits and budgets and this sort of thing. It's the most efficient group that I've ever watched, and I've worked for probably 70 to 100 different public agencies. They really do a wonderful job.
So what sets it up differently? Present company accepted, of course, because we all love Carol.
You know, I really don't know. It is just different. There's a feeling among the working personnel. You know, if there's a problem, they just go fix it. They're an amazing group of people. And so I think it reflects on a number of things. I think it reflects on the board of directors. They surprisingly may have different political opinions, but they get together and they work. They work for one thing. They want to provide water to their customers of a quantity and quality that's necessary, and that's all I do. And the employees have that same feeling. I'm just amazed when I go out and watch them undertaking a job. They can build anything. The superintendent just retired, Barry Van Sickle. I had a ceremony for him yesterday, but he could throw anything out there for that group of people, and they'll do it. It's a wonderful thing.
Did that spirit exist when it started?
You know, when it started, they didn't have any employees. In fact, when they first started serving water in 1962, July 1st of 1962, they had only one permanent employee. And that was a gentleman by the name of Chester Peterson, who had been on the Board of Supervisors, who had taken the job as the manager. But prior to Chet taking that job, the district had only part-time people. And while if you've ever been to Essex, which is the control operational center of the district, and it's a wonderful site and organization, when they first started serving water, they had no employees. And they had two retired people that would sit out there for 4 hours a day. One fellow's name was Bruce Bizard, another person's name was Earl Brandon.
Bruce Bizard?
Earl was an electrical engineering type. and electrical. Actually, he was an electrical contractor. But actually, all those two fellows did is they sat there from about 8 in the morning till noon playing cribbage, because I used to go out and play cribbage with them.
Now, wait a minute. You were a whole lot younger then.
I was like
that. Yeah. How'd you get time off?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was in my early 30s then, but I used to go out and watch these two gentlemen. I thought they were very old at the time, but now when I think about it, I don't think they were very old
at all.
Spry,
weren't they?
They're just more mature. But the district actually did. They operated even through the 1964 flood without any permanent operational staff. They had a part-time person out at Ruth. His name was Albert Nichols. He had been the sheriff of the Humboldt County and had retired out there. And every day, Al would go up to the dam and look at the dam and make sure the dam hadn't dissolved during the night and phone in and say, everything's okay. And that he was a part-time employee. And so it's pretty amazing. We went through the 1964 flood without a staff, but we got through it. It was a little tenuous.
That's what I would think for a relatively new entity, 2 years into its existence, all of a sudden to get slammed with something of that magnitude. Carol, could the water district survive it now?
Sure, yeah.
In as strong a condition as they did in 64?
Yeah, and again, you know, John can tell more of the historical story. The biggest thing is that the greatest risk of a real issue with the dam is if the spillway blocks. So as long as we keep that spillway open, it'll route a flood, and we'll be okay.
What about the turbidity in the water?
Oh, that can go very high, but again, we where we draw the water from the aquifer below the Mad River, there's a natural filtration process, and we now have a turbidity reduction facility. So we might see levels higher than we've seen before, but we can manage that, and we'd get through that fine, in my opinion. Do you agree, John?
Yes, I think you do a lot better job than we did in 1964.
Well, at least you have somebody full-time looking at the dam, huh?
That's true.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19. We'll be back with more from John Winsler and Carol Reisch.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. 5 years ago, Mark and Lori Sanchez hit upon an idea. Gift baskets of Humboldt-made food products that folks could send to family and friends here or in distant places. They coined the name Humboldtishes for their collection, and their company, Bella Baskets, took off. Today, they have regular customers in all 50 states and 14 countries. One man in Point Barrow, Alaska, regularly orders a meat sauce. A film company in Ontario, Canada, orders barbecue sauce for its catering department. This Christmas season, Mark and Lori expect to sell 700 Bella Baskets. Their taste treats include such things as canned albacore, honey, barbecue sauces, hot sauces, jams, pralined almonds, coffee, and chocolate, all Humboldt County products. Based in Old Town, their business continues to grow, and, just as important, it's bringing outside money into our economy. Their website is bella-basket.com. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and activities that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reisch from the Humboldt Municipal Water District and John Winsler, who's kind of is the water district. That's got to feel weird.
Yeah.
John, what is the biggest surprise for newbies to the area about Ruth Dam?
Well, first of all, Ruth Dam was there were two choices of where to build a dam. One was at Butler Valley and the other was at Ruth. And the Butler Valley Dam would cost about $3 million more than the Ruth Dam, so it was obvious where it was going to be. Now, Trinity County opposed it. It actually took official action opposing the construction of the dam up there. But, you know, that dam, the whole water district theory is a neat theory from this standpoint. Up at Ruth, there's often times when there was no water at all in the stream channel above Ruth. And so the dam is built. It probably controls less than 25% of the drainage, so it doesn't really impact a whole lot of area. But that dam stores over, I don't remember what it is,
48,000 acre feet
of water. And that water is released down from the dam downstream. So a stream that would depend on nature to keep water in it now has a constant flow of water in it all the time. There's never there have been times in history when the Mad River at the 299 Bridge had no water in it. And now it has flow all the way into the ocean all the time. So it's a wonderful environmental enhancement, as well as giving us a source of water that can be diverted to the Humboldt Bay area for uses both industrial and domestic. So, you know, it's not a great big dam. It's a pretty dam. It's got a pretty reservoir site in it. It's a very safe dam, and I don't know what else I can say about it.
Was it ever designed as a recreational facility?
Not necessarily. In fact, that was just an adjunct to the reservoir being there. But once the dam was under construction, it was built at the same time as the California Water Plan was initiated. That was Governor our current governor's father. One of the marvelous things he did while he was a governor, the California Water Plan was a great theory, a great idea, and a great benefit to the state. But there was a thought that maybe the water district ought to let the state build the dam. And in fact, there was even a group here who opposed the construction of the dam, thinking the state should be the one. However, Harvey Banks, who was then the director of the water resource of the state, came forth and said, no, you guys ought to build your own dam. We don't know when the state's really going to build dams. And they had a planned dam that was called Ranger Station that would have been built downstream of Pilot Creek, up near Logap. It is a good thing that the district built its own dam. They preceded the state program. The state never would have got around to building Pilot Creek. And so what more can I say except that's it. Okay.
Did it adhere to the timeline?
Yes, you most certainly it did. When the district was formed, and it was formed by a 92% or 93% majority or whatever it was, something like that, the formation of the district did not fund anything. The district didn't even have a plan. So they formed the district, hired Bechtel to make a study and make recommendations and cost estimates of what to do, and they came up with these two dam alternates. Two dam site alternates, okay. And the district board refused to. Using that sum of money, the district went back to the electorate and said, "We need $12 million in bond money." By over a 2/3 majority vote, it was approved. The board members refused to spend any of that money until they had pulp mill contracts in hand. So they sat there with that money for almost 3 years until they got two pulp mills that stepped forward and signed actual contracts which required water to be provided by July 1st, 1962. And so once the contracts were in hand, they had Bechtel finish the design, and this dam was built in a very quick period. It was built in 1 year. From the time they started clearing until they were done in construction, they worked day and night to do it, because once they started to put the fill in the river, they had to be up and have the spillway built, or they would have had to actually breach the dam.
Game on.
Yeah. And so it on July 1st, 1962, we were able to provide water to the pulp mills.
Could it be built that quickly now?
Oh, no. You know, it'd take you longer to permit it than it, you know, did to build a whole project now. So
it's always nice to see somebody who has a little bit more experience than I have to stumble around not swearing. KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from John Winsler and Carol Reisch.
Santa's been to Palco Pharmacy with a full bag overflowing with great ideas. For Christmas season entertaining, you'll find seasonal dishes and glassware for a wonderful festive event. There's some dancing mice and fun figurines that seem to have captured the essence of Christmas joy and fun. And don't forget those very special Christmas cards for loved ones and family members. Those are also available for you. Santa's been there, and now it's your turn to go to Palco Pharmacy in the Scotia Shopping Center, your center for pharmacy and gift ideas this Christmas.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reich and John Winsler. Carol, historically with the Water District, during times of flood, whether it was 71 or 64, I suppose 55 even had some influences coming off of that in the anticipation. How much do natural occurrences like floods impact the day-to-day activities or the planning for the Water District?
Well, day-to-day activities, it really depends on the magnitude of the flood. But again, we were in existence in 64, as we just briefly touched on, and we fared pretty well. I mean, we didn't know if the dam had failed at first, and the initial reports were that it had, but obviously it
didn't. Oh, really? There were some early ones that said that it had blown through?
The original reports, and John can share that with you in a moment. Biggest thing for us is getting our equipment out of the way, getting our people out of the way, but our facilities fared quite well, both the dam and those collectors in the river. So we did okay. So, I mean, if you take another increment above it, we'd have to look at where it gets to and what it does, but we fared quite well.
So some of the rolling stock?
Move it up. Like anybody would do.
Like cows.
Yeah, exactly. Get them out of the way.
John, there was an early report that the dam had either been breached or had released.
Well, you couldn't get to the dam via any roadway, but a deputy sheriff from Trinity County sitting up in South Fork Mountain with binoculars thought he could see the dam and thought the dam had been breached, and it was reported to us. And so I personally didn't think that was the case, but we didn't know, so we had to make an effort to get out there and see what had happened. And so,
which is monumental unto itself, just trying to get out there.
Oh, you couldn't do it by roadway. And so, at that state of the 64 flood, the Navy had brought a carrier up off the coast, and they had a couple of big army helicopters, and they had brought them into the Roanoke Airport. This is their very first appearance at the Roanoke Airport. And so I went out there. I'd collected a couple of coils of cable, being worried about the protection of the spillway and the log boom. So I went out there, and there was an Army helicopter sitting there. And so they let me load my cable onto that helicopter, and the copter was going to take me up to Ruth. And just as they were about to leave, two or three cars arrived, and they were the political people here in the county, the mayor, people from Ferndale and Fortuna, and the board of supervisors. And so they rushed them on the helicopter, and I said, wait a minute, I got to go to Ruth. This is an important thing. So I got off and took my cable off of that because they told me a second copter would come off of the carrier. And so I got my cable off, and this first copter left, and sure enough, another copter showed up. Threw my cable on that, and I was the only guy in this monstrous helicopter except the two pilots, and we took off for Ruth. And it was
What was the view like as you were heading out? That must have been sober.
Well, it was stormy. I mean, it was lousy weather, and so I just got the copter, sat in the back, and I was looking out the little window, the little ports there. You don't have great big windows in the helicopters, but I was looking out, and I could see that the pilot was not in the Mad River drainage. He was in the Van Dusen drainage because I had hunted there a number of times. And so I finally went up and said, do you know where you are? And he said he had a little USGS quad sheet. That's all he had. He had no other map or anything else. And I said, you're not in the right drainage, and you've already gone past the dam. And so the guy says, well, get me back there. And I said, okay, well, go over this ridge and start downstream. And he did. And we got down to it was snowing by that time. It stopped raining. It was snowing. And the guy didn't want to get too close to the ground. We went down to a schoolhouse that we used as a kind of a management center at Ruth. And I had to dump my cable off, and the guy got down within about 10 feet of the ground. He says, I'm not going to get any closer. And I said, well, how do I get off here? And he says, hang on the runner and drop. And so it was kind of funny because it was a mound, and I thought it was a mound of snow, and what it was a big mound of Himalaya berries covered in snow.
We've all been in that one.
I dropped through the snow into the I didn't get hurt dropping off the thing, except I sure got scratched up getting out of the Himalaya.
Brer Rabbit in there, huh?
But we got to the dam, and in the the spillway was okay and the log boom was intact, and we checked. I got a logger up there to come with me, and there's about 40 acres of debris built up behind that log boom. If that log boom had failed, the dam would have failed without a doubt in my mind, but that didn't happen. And ultimately, and I don't remember how I got back to Eureka, but I was very fortunate that day. The people got in the first helicopter. That helicopter crashed.
Is that the one that got wrapped up in the wires?
Yes, that crashed. Yeah. And I was not on that, so I was very fortunate.
KINS, news and information time. Oh, geez, we only got a couple minutes left. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from John Winsler and Carol Reisch.
Talk to Carol.
The Humboldt Waste Management Authority is conducting a series of community workshops to share information regarding what services the authority provides, like hazardous and electronic waste collection events, along with the authority's future goals and opportunities for recycle and disposal. Tonight's workshop is in McKinleyville at the Grace Good Shepherd Church starting at 6. Join in for one of the series of workshops held this week and next week to give your input and share your thoughts about Humboldt Waste Management Authority. A full schedule of meetings are available at the website hwma.net.
Good afternoon, KINS, news and information time. It's 3:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Carol Reisch and John Winsler. You're kind of getting aced out on this show.
That's okay.
I know I see no tears in your eyes, though.
That was by design.
Okay.
I thought this would be very interesting.
John, as an engineer, when you saw what was coming down the pipeline with the 64 flood, did the community really grasp what could and ultimately did happen?
Well, I don't think any of us did, and we got really bad information. I remember Charles Schaller was a public works director at the time, and when the issue came up of whether the dam had been breached or not, I met with him because that would have added an additional quantity of water to an already flooding situation. And a choice had to be made as to what to do with all of the mobile home parks, like in the Arcata Bottom and everything else. And well, as I said before, I didn't believe the dam had breached. Schaller wasn't willing to accept that. And so they ordered people in, and they just moved every one of these mobile homes. And they didn't disconnect the water lines and the sewer lines. They just hooked up and took them out of there and caused, a lot of damage. But it was a risk that had to be taken. And I don't think the people knew. I certainly didn't even have a good grasp of what the magnitude of it.
I was not really registering at that time. Being a wee lad. How did the community react to this as it was developing and continuing to grow in magnitude?
Well, it was so large, I don't think anybody could comprehend. There was water everywhere, places had never seen floodwaters before. All of Arcata Bottom was underwater. There was water flowing over the Samoa Road, going from Mad River water flowing over the Samoa Road going into Humboldt Bay, and things of that nature. I don't think any of us were prepared for that sort of thing, and I don't know that we're prepared today.
Well, just to put it in context from numbers, there's a gauge station maintained by USGS near Arcata, and they had to estimate this because things were blown out, but they had a reasonable basis for estimating it. But the recorded peak discharge in 64 was 81,000 CFS. Today, it's raining. We've had some pretty good rain today, but today it's less than 3,000 acre feet. Nowhere near flood stage, but it just gives you a context of we've had a lot of rain. And if I drive over the Mad River every day to work and I look over and the gravel bar's gone. It looks like a lot of water, but it really puts it in context. It was gigantic.
Yeah. Could it happen again?
Sure.
Certainly.
Sure.
Not the natural elements, but the impacts to the community. Are we better adept now at anticipating this stuff with all the tidal wave tsunami discussions and all the engineering that's happened in the interim? Could it happen again?
There's much better river forecasting tools. And if you go to the emergency responders in the community, they track they compare what actually happened with what was predicted. So from a predictive ability, there's a lot better information. It gets out quickly. But you're still going to have a lot of places where there's still physical facilities, mobile home park, schools. So the physical impacts, in my opinion, would probably be greater because we have more population, I would assume, John.
Well, I think so, too. And people have gone back and built right in these flood-prone areas. It's pretty ridiculous, but it's happened. And there's a few communities like Myers Flat that hasn't grown much. But there still are people who moved back there and into the Wyatt areas that were totally flooded during that flood. I think the damage would probably be worse today.
The thing that I have a tough time grasping, it's not the highway marker in southern Humboldt that says 64. It's probably because I'm more familiar with the Klamath area. And just trying to envision it, to have the bridge blow out, and it was about the same height, to have an entire town just whoosh, gone.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I look at and go, how? And just am dumbfounded at that kind of stuff. How was the Klamath River versus the Mad or the Eel that seemed
the Klamath, wiped out the town of Klamath and Klamath Glen. It was enormous. None of the flood data that's reported in these subsequent reports of the flood are accurate. All of the data, the USGS lost all of the gauging stations. The only two rivers on the North Coast that didn't lose their gauging stations was the Mattole and the Russian River. Everything else was gone. And so it's fairly hypothetical as far as what the magnitude of that 64 storm was. And
somehow, that's kind of neat. At least for me, we don't know. We can't manage God. Okay. Mm-hmm. So things happen. Anticipate and be prepared for whatever. Like you said, building the floodplains. Okay, even if it's a 100-year floodplain, it's coming. We know it's coming. So why do that? It's interesting how we forget yesterday and focus on tomorrow all the time. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a kind of heavy thing to end the show with, huh? How about a good joke, guys? If somebody wants more history, either about the Water District, Carol, or John about 64, is the Humboldt County Room, is that a good place to start at the county library?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm not sure what they do have there, Brian. I've just always had my own library that I've had available to me in terms of
So call John Winsler.
Don't do that.
Get a pass to
library.
His library
is a great idea, Brian.
Yeah. bring food and booze, right?
Well, and the Water District also has some documents that we periodically get folks asking for. So if there's some interest, we can check what we have also.
Good deal. Thanks for coming, Guy. And happy winter. Here we go.
Happy winter.
And Merry
Christmas.
Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone in the oven. I'll see you tomorrow morning.